Right, we're back in Exodus. Second message on Israel's wilderness wanderings from Egypt to Canaan. So last time we talked about the Red Sea crossing. Remember that? How that Pharaoh pursued the nation of Israel and wasn't going to let them go. And the nation was brought to, they were boxed in, and they were brought to a position where they were in lots of trouble, and they had no way out. And the only one that could really deliver them was God. And he opened up the Red Sea, and they all went through, and he defeated their enemies. So they get out the other side, and in chapter, we finished chapter 14, this time we're in chapter 15. Chapter 15 is the Song of the Redeemed, and it's a song sang by Moses in Israel, and it's really a song exalting in God, who actually brought about that victory. And you've got Miriam, she gets in there with all the women, and you've got the tambourines going, so you've got a real, good thing going. But these, all of these things that happened to Israel, as we read in the New Testament in Corinthians, happened as examples for us. So there's always truths and there's always things that happen to the nation that we can learn from. And it's very much like that. When you're first born again or when you're first saved, you come out of Egypt, so-called, and there's always a song in the heart, isn't there? There's always something to, you're glorifying on what God has actually done for you. Just as the nation did here. He opened up the Red Sea and he did something for them that they couldn't do for themselves. And he delivered them. And it's exactly the same for us. We've been delivered from Satan's power over us, from the power of death's sting, you know, all of these things. And there's a song in your heart, and everything is really good. We know when you're first saved, it's like the, you know, the honeymoon period. Everything is good. All the experiences are there, you know. You drive downtown, you ask for a car park, and you get a car park. You still ask for car parks, Ellen? Good on you, Jennifer. Do you still get them? Awesome. So the context of chapter 15 is there's a song, and they're singing it, and they're really, really glorifying in God, and they're really happy for all that he's done. He's delivered them from under slavery, just like it is when we're first saved. And it's a honeymoon period, and for those that are married, everybody knows that a honeymoon period doesn't last. There comes a time when you get into your first squabble, and you think, what the hang is this? You can vouch for that? Yeah, so it doesn't last. So when you get to chapter 15, this is the song, you know, they've just been delivered. There's a big song in their heart, and they're glorifying in God. Everything is about God. When you read that song, it's all about what God has done. He's done this, he's done this, and we exalt him. And Miriam, you know, all the women are going with the tambourines. Really good scene. So I want to start from verse 22, which is after the song. Okay, so today we'll read from verse 22 through to 27. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness, and they found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he had cast it into the waters were made sweet. And there he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. And he said, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Verse 27, "And then they came to Elim, where there are 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and so they camped there by the waters." So they've just come out the other side. They've got this massive song in their heart, and then they're led somewhere else by God. And it says in verse 22, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness, and they found no water. So you got a completely different scene. They've gone 3 days out. Now you've got to remember that gone is Egypt's water supply. Okay? Gone is Egypt's provision. They've come out of Egypt, they're on their way to Canaan, and God is now their guide. So Egypt is behind them, Canaan's in front, but gone is all their ability to actually make provision for themselves. And it's quite hard to contemplate, you know, like at the moment, we've got a drought, you know, but we still don't, the full effects of that, we still aren't really tested on, because you can still go to your tap and turn your tap on, you know, and out comes water. Now, things are actually hard for farmers, and things are really hard on the land, but you've still got the provision of water. You can still shower at night, you can still turn the tap on and get a drink. But for the nation of Israel, all of these things are gone. They no longer have that ability to draw what they had when they were in Egypt. They had food supply, and they had water supply. So they go 3 days' journey. So obviously when they came out of Egypt, they carried water with them. But you know that these supplies would have been dwindled pretty quickly. So they've gone 3 days and they actually can't find any water. You know, naturally they say it's about, you can go 3 days, humanly speaking, without water, and then your body, yeah, starts to break down. I think it's about a 3 day limit. So you've got this with the nation. All of the things that they depended upon back there are actually taken away from them. And they've got to actually rely upon God because he is their guide. Through the wilderness, they don't have those comforts that they had back then. So you've got, this is the first real test for the nation. The first thing that comes upon this nation is actually thirst. You know? It's actually thirst. And there's only one that can actually meet that need. And it's actually God. And when I was reading this, I thought that's actually so true. You know, when you're first saved, you're really hungry for things, especially the things of God. You know, the things of Egypt don't actually have as much pull that they once had. And you know that what you're looking for in life is actually not found back there. And so for the nation here, their first actual experience was that of thirst. They needed thirst. And I was reminded of those words that Jesus said, if any man thirst, let him come to me. Underline the me. It's all in a person. And I will give you living water, you know. So, yeah, if any man thirst. So they go 3 days into the wilderness and they find no water. So you got the first real test for the nation. What are they going to do? Now, in verse 23, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. They've gone 3 days' journey. They're really parched. They're worn out. The first test, they can't find any water. And then when they actually find it, they can't drink it. Which is worse, do you think? Needing water and not actually finding it, or needing water and finding it, but you can't actually take it. I think I'd rather not have it there. So it's like a double whammy for the nation. Here they've got water in front of them. Their natural desire is, we need water, but they can't actually partake of it. When I used to work in the forestry, at this time of the year, you just wouldn't believe how much water you'd actually go through. We'd go through like easy 5 litres a day just through physical work and sweating it really out. And we used to be down in these blocks, and if you'd run out of water, you needed water because you were just going through it so much. And there would be these dirty, stinky little ponds that the water wasn't flowing, but they were all orange and brown, and you'd be stuck down the gully with an empty bottle, you know, looking at it. And some of the guys would take it anyway because they actually needed it, you know. But I could never put my bottle in and take it because it just didn't look right. You know? But it's really hard when you actually need something but you can't, and you see it there, but you can't actually partake of it.
Start a fire and burn down the forest, but have good water.
Yeah. So for the nation, it was like this. Here they are. They can't find any water, but then when they do, it's like a double whammy. They can't actually take it because it's bitter. So when I was thinking about this, it interested me that, remember, they are led by God. Okay? So God is actually leading the nation to bitter waters. He's leading the nation to bitter waters. Now, because whatever happened to the nation, it happened as an example. Every Christian will at some point go through bitter waters. You'll be led into situations and scenarios that are not nice. And what God is trying to teach here to the nation of Israel, it'll come to us, whether it happens to you at the beginning of your Christian walk, in the middle or at the end, but we will at times always have bitter experiences and bitter waters that we're going to have to face. Every Christian, it's the same. It can be many things. It can be the loss of a loved one, you know? Just how some people can take a scenario that is really horrible and it can affect them in certain ways. It can be persecution, can be a bitter situation that can cause bitterness. It can be sickness. It can be wrongs that are done to you. You can be completely innocent, but almost like a Joseph, just have all of these sets of circumstances that happen to you, and it's just not fair. And this happens to you, and this happens to you, and it's just not fair, and you're totally innocent, but it keeps rolling, you know? Bitter experiences are going to come to every Christian. Bitter waters. So it's really how you actually react to those scenarios. But for the nation, they were led. They were led there by God to these things. So we shouldn't be, we shouldn't really expect any difference. In fact, bitter experiences come to everyone. And not all bitter experiences, I don't believe, are... God orders all things in our life, you know. But he's got some things that are tailor-made for us. And for the nation, this is one of those scenarios. They were led to water, but they couldn't actually take it because it was bitter. So you get to verse 24, and how did they react? And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Well, you could say, fair enough, you know, they'd gone 3 days, they were tired, they were parched, they were getting a bit scratchy. But when you look at the nation of Israel, this is the start of a continual moaning and complaining and whinging about what God is actually doing with them. And it starts here, and it's a continual theme throughout all of their wanderings, that of grumbling and complaining. And we are exactly the same. Remember, they've only gone 3 days' journey. Where's the song? Where's the tambourines? You know what I mean? Like, you've had a massive experience, the Red Sea crossing. That's a huge experience where the waters have opened up. You know, and you go 3 days and straight away, where is God? Where is God that can do the impossible? You know? It's all forgotten. But we are exactly the same. We do that. 1 minute we're exulting in what God has done, and the next minute we're complaining and moaning and grumbling. I remember when I first did my short-term mission trip, one of the trips I did to the Philippines, I came home and I said to Mum, "I'm never going to complain again," because I saw all the suffering that the villagers were going through, and, you know, just what they didn't have. And I said to Mum, "I'm never going to complain again. We have got so much." And it was about 2 days, maybe 3 days later, I came out to go to work and I found my car on blocks and all my wheels were gone. Would have only been 2 days later. And I moaned my head off. Didn't take long. Grumbled. I complained. 6 o'clock in the morning, tried to start the car, nothing's happening. Not moving. I didn't actually see it was dark. No, it was on blocks.
Got to wonder, what would have happened if they hadn't grumbled?
Well, if they had looked in faith.
Yeah, if it had been the opposite, and they hadn't murmured and grumbled and complained. You've got to think that God would have thought, that's really good of you, children, for being so patient. Now let's put a tree in there, you know? The solution was always there, but they grumbled together.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. So that verse 24 is the start of it. So, but when I look at Israel, I know that I'm no different. You know? None of us are different. We have times of victory and we have times of defeat. We have times of mumbling and groaning and complaining, and just like it was for them, that's what it is for us. So God's solution here in 25. So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he cast it into the waters were made sweet. And there he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. The actual Hebrew word for showed there actually means instructed and taught. So God actually instructed Moses and taught Moses something about this tree that he was going to cast into the waters. So Moses actually had a deeper insight, really, into God's overall plan. What is the tree significant of?
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, all of those things. It's actually the cross, you know. Just as Moses had to put a serpent up on a pole, which was a tree, you got that same thing, that sin would be dealt with upon the tree. Cursed is every man that is hung upon a tree. Christ was made a curse for us to redeem us from the curse of the law. You get to Revelation and you've got a tree that someone spoke about that is for the healing of the nations. So yeah, the tree speaks of the cross of Christ. And this is being cast in to the waters. So yeah, he instructed Moses. He taught Moses that a tree would be cast in to the waters to be made sweet. So when you get the truths of the cross are actually really vital, because the cross actually robs death of its sting, but also robs life of its bitterness. But the big question is really how, you know? How is this all worked out? I want to take two scriptures in the New Testament concerning bitterness and probably the context of them, really. The first one is in Hebrews chapter 12:11-15. Hebrews 12:11-15. The context of Hebrews 12 is actually discipline. And it's saying that if God loves you, he will actually discipline you in the same way that a loving father has to discipline his children. It's exactly the same relationship. You do that because you love your child and you can see areas in your child's life that need to be corrected, you know? And it's exactly the same with God. He will allow situations, just like he did for the nation, to be instructive toward their walk concerning him. So you get to Hebrews chapter 12, and from 3 on, right through to 11 through to 15, it's all about God's love for his children, but also that he actually disciplines those that he loves. And in verse 11 it says, "Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." Okay, so it's talking about you working with God with whatever is happening in your situation. "Therefore, strengthen the hands which hang down and the feeble knees." In other words, don't give up hope in God, but carry on. Work with God in it. "And make straight paths for your feet, so that what is lame may not be dislocated, but rather healed. Pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. Looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, and lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled." And when I thought about the context in which this is talking about bitterness, is talking about discipline, you know. And an example of what I'm saying is, you remember Naomi in the book of Ruth? Mm-hmm. Remember she left the land and she went down to Moab. And terrible things happened. She lost her husband and she lost both her sons. Yes, she came back with Ruth, who turned out to be a real blessing to her. But she came back and she said, I want you to call me Mara, not Naomi. The same place, Mara, you know. Call me this because I'm bitter, you know. Mara means bitterness. And it was all to do with how she actually viewed God. She viewed God as being hard and punishing her. And when I look at this, he's saying here, look out that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble. Many become defiled by it. And a lot of it is how you actually view God. Do you view God as a loving God who really has got your best intentions in mind? Yes, things are going to come your way and situations are going to come your way that are going to be really hard and not taste nice. But we need to understand that he does love us. He loves us, he loves us, he loves us. And he really cares for us. And not to see God in the wrong light. You need to work with God. This whole thing is strengthen your hands and your feeble knees. Make straight paths, you know. Work with God with whatever is happening. And don't let bitterness toward God actually spring up. Don't let it rise so that you start to question God's love for you. Just as a parent will love his child so much that, okay, this is a wrong area. I don't want to do this, but I have to. Same with the nation of Israel. He led them to bitter waters that he might prove something about himself and also show the nation that their heart was, something was wrong with their heart and their dependence. So Naomi is one example. Another one is, do you remember Hannah in the Bible? The other, it talks about her, like, remember a guy had two wives, Hannah and Penina. Penina, Penina. I can't remember how it's. He had two wives. Hannah was one, Penina was the other one. Penina was pumping out the kids, left, right and centre. You know, she had children in abundance. And of course, Hannah had none. And Penina used to mock her. You know? Hannah was loved by her husband and she mocked her and mocked her and mocked her. And it says that she was bitter of soul. Remember when she came up to the temple and was asking for a son, which turned out to be a real blessing to her because it was the Samuel, you know, the great prophet. But this is the Hannah. And it says that because of the mocking and everything from Penina, she was bitter of soul. You know, and that's, so there's another one just like Naomi that, had this thing that had caused an issue in her life, an issue of bitterness, really. But God was gracious to her in that. I found one little quote. He who carries bitterness to bed with him will find the devil creep between the sheets. I thought that is very true. Just like in this Hebrews passage, it is, bitterness is something that defiles many. It's quite widespread. It has its tentacles going out, you know. So we need to keep guard about bitterness. The other scripture is actually in Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 30-32. And the context of this passage is really about putting on the new man, laying aside our fleshly attitudes and fleshly ways and putting on Christ. And then you get to verse 30 and he says, do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God by whom you are sealed for the day of redemption. I'm glad he says that we are sealed there, but we can grieve God. And one of the ways we can grieve God is the next verse, let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away with you with all malice. So bitterness is one of these things that if it's allowed to grow in us, grieves the Spirit of God that is within us. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. So the context here really is about relationships. You know, the wrongs that are done to, the wrongs that can be done to you by someone can actually cause you to become really bitter, you know. I've found that sometimes these things take a while to actually work through. You know, for you cannot, some people can apply the cross of Christ instantly to the scenarios. And if you can do that, you can deal with it straight away. But others take quite a bit of time to work it. And I think the reality, probably most of us take time to work through wrongs and things that we need to forgive of people so that that bitterness just doesn't actually grow. It's like sometimes you actually just don't want to actually forgive someone. You're quite happy not to, you know. You're quite happy to live with something that's not right. It's wrong to do it, but sometimes it just takes time. It's like the man who went to the Christmas party, and it was a festive time of the year, and he had always had a problem with one of his colleagues at work. And his boss said, look, it's the festive time of the year. I want you to go across and wish him a happy new year. Be cheerful, and because it's festive, you're to do the right thing. So he walked across to the man on the other side of the room, and he said to him, I would like to wish you a happy new year, but only one. But that's what we're like sometimes, you know? I thought that was quite funny. But bitterness is wrongs done to us can actually, it's a bitter experience in our life when someone just stabs you, you know, just does something really nasty to you that you don't deserve, you know. And the ability to forgive, if we could do it quickly, we would actually stop it in its tracks, you know. I read quite a cool example when Japan invaded Korea just after the turn of the century. They were brutal. They slaughtered men, women, and children. The Christians were really had a hard time under them. They boarded up all of the churches, and the Christians had a really hard time. And there was one pastor in the village that kept persisting one of the Japanese police about having a service, you know, and he kept coming to him, we want to have a, because there was still Christians there, and he agreed. So he opened, they took the wood off the doors and allowed them to come in, and the music was blaring out throughout the city. All the Christians came out and they went in there, and there was songs blaring out through the city, and it came to a hymn, Nearer My God to Thee. And the Japanese police chief, when they were singing that hymn, ordered his troops to barricade up the doors again. And so they barricaded up the doors, and then he ordered them to douse the church in kerosene. And then they set fire to it. And the place was packed. They were all in there. And the place started burning down, and people realizing what was happening tried to get out through the windows, and they were mowed down by bullets. And then the pastor realized, well, we're done for. The last hymn that they sung was at the cross where I first saw the light and the burden of my heart was rolled away. And the roof collapsed down upon them, and everyone in there died. You know, this has happened at the turn of the century. And because of that, through all the next generations, there was this bitterness and this hatred toward the Japanese people from the Koreans, because it was a despicable act, you know, what they had done. And it went generation after generation. And it was something like 70 years later, a team of Japanese pastors traveled through Korea. And they came to the very place. Now, the Koreans had put a monument on the ground where this church had stood. And it had on it what had happened, you know. And the Japanese pastors traveling through the place came there and read it and were just filled with shame to what their own people had done. They went back to Japan and they went throughout the churches and raised money. And they got enough money to build a white church. And they sent the money back, and they built this church on the very spot where it happened. And then when it came time for the dedication, the Japanese pastors went over to Korea. Now, all up to this point, there was no forgiveness from the Korean Christians toward the Japanese. And they had this dedication service, and they decided to sing these very two hymns that were sung, you know, when the place was burnt down. Nearer, my God, to thee. What I read that said that when they got to the last hymn, at the cross, where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart was rolled away, apparently the Japanese pastors just broke down and came into the middle of the floor, and there was reconciliation. You know, the Koreans realized that they'd held this for so long, but they didn't actually need to hold it anymore. You know, there was reconciliation, and it was met through the song talking about the cross, you know, where the burden of my heart was rolled away. And they had held on to this through generations. And it's like that. The cross can make bitter situations sweet. It can make bitter situations sweet. And when I read that, I thought, that is just so cool, you know. You don't need to hold onto things, because God has actually made a way to take a bad situation and actually make you able to cope, so that there's no resentment in our hearts, you know. There doesn't need to be bitterness. But the big question really is how do you do that? You know, when it happens to you, how do you do that? And the only way really is you've got to rebound as quick as you can toward Christ. And you've got to realize that whatever is said against you, it was said against him, you know. He fully identified with every situation that we are going to go through, and he's able to give you what is needed so that these things don't take root in our lives. It might not turn out all good, but you will be able to cope without bitterness actually growing in your life for these things. So, yeah, it's a continual laying aside of the hurts and the things that actually come to actually him who's able to bear them up. I heard a story about they had this church service in England, and everyone, it was a real, real big sing song, and everyone was requesting songs. And right at the end, the guy that was up front, he looked over the front, and here was a paralyzed woman lying down, right down under the platform. And he said to her, "Sister, do you have a request? Do you have a song?" And she said, "Yes, Count Your Many Blessings." And I thought, that is so cool. That's someone that, count your many blessings, count them one by one. That was the song that she requested. She was paralyzed, you know, but there was someone who was not at all overcome by her circumstances, but her eyes were still heavenward. Count your many blessings. I thought that was quite cool. Right, back to the passage. So there he tested them. If anyone's taking notes, Deuteronomy 8, verse 2 to 5 gives a real good little insight into that God allowed all of these things so that for two reasons. One, that they may know their own condition. In other words, God will allow things into our lives, like bitter waters or bitter experiences, so that our heart would be brought out really for what it is, and two, that it would cause a dependence upon him. These things happen. And he said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. And in verse 27, and then they came to Elim, where there was 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and so they camped there by the waters. Always after a trial, there is pretty consistently the blessing of God will follow. Now, we all like Elim. Feet up between the palm trees in the hammocks, sipping cocktails, bit of rest and relaxation. We all love that. We don't like Mara, you know. Churches, there's a whole denomination after Elim, you know, because we were like that. I've never heard of a church of the bitter waters or Mara. The church of Mara, I've never heard of one, you know.
Grumblers.
You get a lot of grumblers.
That's my church.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're called living waters, you know.
Not dead waters.
Yeah, or stagnant pools. But no, you never, you know, but how much of Christ is learnt at Amara, you know? We all love Elims, you know, because it's easy, you know. But God has both. He has the Elim for us and he has the Mara. And they're both needed, you know. They're both needed. God uses them all. So he led them to this. It's part of God's leading. It wasn't his punishment, but it was part of God's leading that they learned something here. Just as they were dependent upon him at the Red Sea, God was their only answer at the Red Sea. They were backed into a corner. So here, water. It's a need. Is God going to provide what is needed? And he did. He turned bitter water into sweet so they were able to actually use it for what they needed. So yeah. Is there anything else in here that others can see?